This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I've paid my dues time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes, I've made a few.
Hello and welcome to Tag Teams back again.
Whoop, there it is.
The first whoop, there it is of 2016. The first Tag Teams back again of 2016. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yes. Kelly Nelson here, joined as always by Marty Sleeze. How are you doing, Marty?
First off, I feel the need to apologize for what happened last time. I'm sorry for falling asleep, and I was in no condition to perform, and I want to apologize to my co-hosts, Kelly and Johnny. It was kind of rude of me. Hope they weren't offended. Right. Hope I didn't offend the good people of the Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only, the fans and supporters. I want you all to know that I'm very excited for some Ricky Martel, and there will be no falling asleep tonight, I promise.
Well, I don't think that was well known. You could have got away with that.
It wasn't known?
No.
Oh, God damn it. I should have listened to the podcast.
Yes, you should have, because we very creatively covered for your absence.
I'll have to find out the creative cover now.
Always listen to your work. That's rule number one in the podcasting biz.
You know, I know you know this already, but I've never actually listened to a Tag Teams back again in my life.
All right. Well, I put up the playlist for the end of the year. Now's the time to start.
What a great plug for your hard work. I love that.
There you go. Yes, yes.
A seamless transition.
Pretty much. Yes, Marty was referring to a Titans of Wrestling episode, the second Roddy Piper tribute episode where Marty mysteriously vanished halfway through the show. Apparently he fell asleep.
Yes, I'm sorry. Very sorry.
Kayfabe was, we had a different explanation, but
oh my God.
Marty's shooting from the hip on on the show tonight. Anyway, yes, it's a new year, but we have a little bit of business from 2015 to finish up, and that's what we're doing tonight. We are looking at part two of the Strikeforce versus the Islanders feud of 1987.
Wait, that's what we watched? I thought we watched the best of Kelly Kelly.
The best of Kelly Kelly tag team matches.
Actually, there was probably quite a bit of Kelly Kelly tag team matches.
You would think.
I would know. I feel like I remember watching a lot of Kelly Kelly tag team matches.
There you go. Well put together.
Instead of backloading the show with stuff like Mark Jindrak, I feel like we should front him up.
Mark Jindrak, Kelly Kelly. What was the other one? There was another one that you...
Remember what I did last time. But anyways, I feel like the greatest wrestler ever, we need to really explore every nook and cranny.
It was Scotty Too Hotty, I remember.
Scotty Too Hotty. The lost stars of the 2000s.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, they're lost all right. Where are they now?
Luther Reigns next. Luther Reigns related to Roman Reigns.
Oh wow!
I didn't even think of that until now.
That's
they really like the last name Reigns.
That's going to be a shocking plot twist that nobody really wants to see.
Except for me.
Except for Marty Sleaze.
Very hurtful, Kelly. Very presumptuous of you.
I know. Anyway, yes. So last time we basically talked about the build to this feud, how it came about, how it evolved from the Can-Am connection versus the Islanders to Ricky Martel all alone against the Islanders, and we saw some pretty awesome matches. And then finally, Tito Santana answered the call, and Strikeforce was born. And today, yeah, we're giving a pretty thorough look at this feud. We're going to look at six tag team matches between the two teams.
Six and one singles.
And we have one singles match, and that's between Tito Santana and Haku.
Haku!
And yeah, so we're going to look at them in New York. We're going to look at them in Boston. We're going to look at them in Philly. Basically the Northeast loop here. And so basically these matches take place between October and December, early December 1987. A couple of them actually take place on the same day. And often quite close between each other. And so we're going to see, this is interesting because we're going to see basically, you know, how these performers, you know, would go from city to city, day to day, and have this routine down. And no two matches are exactly the same, but there's a lot of similarities between the two, or between all of them.
Right.
And we'll discuss that. There's some really good matches to discuss. There's some that are a little, you know, almost, you know, just average, I would say. But it's interesting. We got different crowds. We got New York, Boston, Philly. We have three matches from Philly, in fact. So for fans of Titans of Wrestling, we got plenty of Dick Graham.
Toma.
And his confusion over what Samoan team he was watching, or Polynesian team that he was watching, having flashbacks of the early 80s and having Cal Rudman at his side watching the Wild Samoans. So yeah, well let's get right into this. Marty, any plugs to start things off before we dive into the matches?
Nothing really. No, nothing. It's been a great New Year so far. How about you?
Yeah, I can't complain. It's been pretty good. I do know you have a forthcoming Brainbuster
show. Oh, that's true. I am defending the World's Heavyweight Championship of Brainbuster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And I will vanquish all opponents. I have no doubt about this, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, I want you to vanquish them
all. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, when you know Luther Reigns, you know it all.
Yeah, you keep winning, and I'll be waiting eventually to return to the ring, so to speak. And we'll finish things off. We'll have to have the rubber match.
This is true. It's going to be one all. We are the only two Brainbuster heavyweight champions of the world ever.
Yeah. So, yeah, your next defense is probably about maybe.
I think it's in 10 days, actually.
10 days. Okay. Well, there we go.
Oh, man. Gorilla would be talking about my ridiculous travel schedule right now.
Right. So in about
how can I be taking a podcast on this beforehand?
You should be training.
Should be reviewing.
All right. And yes, well, let's get into it. So first up, we are going to the Garden.
Boston, baby.
Boston. And this is October the 3rd.
The Duke of Dorchester.
Yeah. Now, we're going to have quite a few interesting, unique commentary pairings to discuss tonight. And our first one is Gorilla Monsoon and the Duke of Dorchester, Pete Doherty, also known as the Golden Terra, in the 70s under a hood. Quite a famous job guy.
I was in Dorchester over the Christmas break.
Yeah.
You should have Dorchester, it's not a bad place.
Not a bad place.
Well, it's not Roxbury, so it's better than that.
Okay, well, there you go. Doherty on commentary is definitely an acquired taste.
I don't know if he's an acquired taste.
I don't know if anyone's acquired that taste.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's acquired that taste.
He wasn't too bad in these matches, but at least that's what I think.
Well, him and Mike McGurk were pretty rough.
Oh, right, that one. That's the ultimate abomination. No, was it Mike? Well, we'll get to that one later.
I'm almost positive it was Mike. Yeah, it was Mike McGurk because she called Brain brainless. And I remember eye rolling so fiercely, I thought my eyeballs got stuck into the top of my skull.
Actually, that was Bruce Pritchard and McGurk and Johnny V.
That was Johnny V. You're right. That wasn't Duke of Dorchester. They kind of sound a little similar.
Well, they did do a commentary in Houston together, the three of them.
They did, because I watched the Demolition versus Killer Bees match.
Yeah,
that has the worst commentary team ever.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. But anyway, the teams at hand, of course, are Strikeforce and Islanders, and we're going to be discussing quite a lot of them tonight. Marty, what did you think of this first match?
So, interesting twist to start. We had the Islanders ramp Strikeforce together. How many times have you seen a heel team do that to a babyface team?
That's right. That is interesting.
But as expected, because it's early on in the match, so we're in the babyface line, which is a very important segment. Actually, I'm going to plug something right now. I will be writing a blog article in defense of the babyface shine. I'm tired of people shitting on it. It is an incredibly important part of a match, and I'm tired of people like Raven saying that it's not important. And I think I can't remember who said it. Somebody said it on PWO. I think it was Parv who said it wasn't useful. Like, you go right to the heat and do the comeback. So Parv, if it wasn't you, I apologize, but. if it was, you're on notice, brother. Babyface shine. It's important. So Strikeforce catches them both coming off the top. So, you know, to initiate the babyface shine. Because, you know, the Islanders got a little cocky. They were going up top, you know, high-risk maneuver. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have Strikeforce ready to, you know, to do that. Yeah. Tama takes his big flop early in the match, which is – I like that. It's a hot way to start the match, don't you think?
Was that the massive bump over the top rope? And then,
no, I was talking about the big. Yeah, I'm talking about the. No, that's off a drop kick. I'm talking about the big flop.
Oh, where he's pulled
the
up.
Belly flop.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then, I mean, other than that, yeah, just Strikeforce is so energetic. Mm-hmm. You know, it just so you know it's effortless. They just get you sucked right into the match. And the bump that Kelly was talking about was basically Martel drop kicks Tama, who does this like crazy bump over the top rope, and then it's just like, fuck it, I'm going for more. And then after he lands on the floor, he just careens over the railing.
Yeah,
it was pretty wild.
It was wild.
They're just working him over. I took handwritten notes for the first time in a long time, so I'm trying to find the transition segment here. I see Haku missed an elbow into an arm drag. They knocked some heads. What's going on here? Where's the – Haku had a big drop kick. What was the transition?
I want to say was it an eye rake? It was –
Was it something very simple?
It was pretty simple, yeah.
Oh, they knocked heads.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, which is very common in 1980s wrestling. They knock heads a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tama hurls him out. Actually, I like this heat segment quite a bit. A couple of the heat segments had a lot of front chantries, which I know you like. I know you love the front. I literally wrote my notes every time there's a front chantry. It's like, Kelly!
I like that term for it much better than front face lock. I'll give you that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Yeah. The front face lock, man. Yeah. How much you love it. But I thought this one was pretty high impact. You know, they had the big drop kick on Martel. They hurled him over the top rope, rammed him off the post. You know, this was a pretty good lead segment for him. The Haku shoulder breaker, there was a lot of big spots.
Mm-hmm.
And Martel was really good at selling. And there's another one. Oh, in the there's another one where he's really, really good selling. This one was more, I think this was the match that was more sprinty with a lot of big offense from the Islanders. Mm-hmm. And then the common transition we'll point out was the missed somersault by Haku, which allows Santana to go in. And Santana hits the flying burrito. And then he fires up for the figure four. But Haku comes in, headbutts him, and then pins him.
Mm-hmm.
That is the correct finish, right?
Yes.
Pretty sure that's the finish.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yes, that is the finish.
Yeah.
All right. So, I thought it was a great match. I liked it. It was. We'll have to talk through the other matches to kind of like jog my memory. But I remember thinking this was the big offense match. And I like the finish. Sets up for a match next, because this is the first Philly match they've had, or second Philly match.
First,
sets up for a match in November.
First Boston match, yeah.
Sorry, Boston match.
Yeah.
First Boston match sets up for the Boston match in November, which will be a title defense.
Yes. This one was the fast paced match of all the ones we're going to look at, the sprint, if you will. Probably about 10 minutes or so.
I'd say about 10-12 minutes.
Yeah. Nonstop action, all action. I really liked it, and it was like the shine, like you mentioned. I mean, it does go on at the beginning for a good like 6 minutes, maybe even longer than that.
But I like that. It's fist pumping. It gets me more like my basic crux of my defense for the shine is that, you know, you get more invested in the baby faces because you like a winner.
Right. We've gone over this on Titans a million times with the Bob Backlund shines, and I've never had a problem with it.
This is true. You are a known defender of the shine.
Because eventually it does, you know, you get more than just the shine. And yeah, maybe Backlund, it goes a bit longer for a lot of people.
But, yeah, I would agree that, yeah, Backlund can go a little overboard on the shine.
Right, but eventually you do get heat, and you do get, you know, the heels take over, so it's not like a nonstop shine for the whole match. But, yeah, Martel was really good here, of course. You had Haku with some of his offense. I really like the shoulder breaker. I like a good shoulder breaker, and that was a textbook.
Greg Valentine has a good shoulder breaker.
Yeah, he does. This was a textbook Haku shoulder breaker. The finish, as we'll see, is something they used a few times around the horn back then. This is the first match in Boston, so the heels are going to win. The Islanders cheat their way to another victory. They did so in MSG in September, that match we looked at the end of a previous show. So you get the heels with victory in the first matchup. And, of course, now you have the babyfaces need vengeance. They need to come back, and they have future matches planned for them. So yeah, and this was before the title switch that's coming up in a few weeks. So the Strikeforce were not the tag team champions at this point. I recommend this match. October 3rd, 1987 at the Boston Garden. So check it out, fans. It's a pretty good one. And now we're going on to Philly. A week later, October 10th, and this was actually the main event of this card, essentially. It was a pretty weak card. They only drew 4,500 people to the Spectrum. I'm assuming there were other shows.
What was the second biggest match?
I want to say it was Bam Bam Bigelow and King Kong Bundy. I don't know if you would consider that the main event. This actually went on last too. The tag match.
Bam Bam was
over. He was hot, but it was pretty early in his run.
Yeah, because by the end of the year he was doing tags with Hogan, but I don't know if he had started doing those yet. I would say this was probably the main event.
Yeah, well, they had Butch Reed and Superstar Billy Graham on the undercard, which actually was main eventing MSG shows at the same time. But,
oh, wow.
Yeah, Graham meant a bit more in New York, I think, than he did in Philly. Well, there's always the old story that in the early 80s, Monsoon, he had a newspaper article, like a weekly article in a Philadelphia paper where he talked about wrestling, of course. And in one of them, he mentioned that Superstar Graham had died. This was like 1980 or so. And he never printed a retraction to it. And Meltzer, I know, wrote that, you know, years later, even in Philly, the fans thought this like that this was a fake Billy Graham, that the real one had died, especially when he came back as Kung Fu Billy Graham. And he was like, you know, almost unrecognizable. So that may speak for some of his drawing power in Philly. Nonetheless, this was a pretty weak card.
There was a Jerry Allen versus Frenchie Martin.
Yeah, that was the semi-main.
That was the Divas death slot.
Yeah.
There was your Kelly Kelly right there, Frenchie Martin.
Boris Zukov and Hillbilly Jim.
Oh, man, I escaped from watching Hillbilly Jim again.
Yeah. Some of these matches, Nikolai Volkov against Jim Powers. Oh, my.
Oh, my God. CB Affy is wrestling.
Yeah, Bob Orton.
Oh, Brutus Beefcake versus Danny Davis. That could be candid. Whatever. Danny Davis is pretty wretched.
Yeah, so the poor Philly fans had to put up with all this shite. And they get a main event, though, that is actually a pretty awesome match. So,
yeah, that's true. The match was is pretty badass. So,
yeah.
But I would probably have left halfway through. I probably just wouldn't be able to stand it.
Yeah, yeah, I know. We have Dick Graham, of course, on commentary with Craig DeGeorge, the prototype for Sean Mooney and all the other.
Right on down to Byron Saxton.
Right on down to Byron Saxton, the inoffensive middle-of-the-road commentator.
Cookie-cutter. Spineless.
Spineless, white, mostly usually white. Yeah, Byron Saxton has broke the mold, I guess.
Yes, but Michael Cole makes fun of him, so at this point he's like the lamest human being ever. When Michael Cole is making fun of you and eye rolling at you, wow, it's hard to be lamer than that.
That's true. So anyway, that's your commentary team, and they were apparently sort of the permanent Philly team at this time. Yeah, Marty, what did you think about this this encounter?
Girls in Cars, man.
Yeah.
Girls in Cars. I always thought that song reminded me of Summertime Girls by YNT. What is your take on that?
I'm not too familiar with that song.
It's a great song. You should look it up.
Okay, I will now.
Yeah, also good by YNT is Contagious. It's outrageous. They rhyme contagious and outrageous. It's mind-blowing. They were actually like a pretty decent heavy metal band that, like, you know, the late 80s went hair metal. And, you know, they had some good hair metal hits, too. Summertime Girls being one of them. Anyways, wanted to get that in there. Girls in Cars. It's a great music video. Definitely check it out.
Could a woman be?
Yeah. So we got Strike Force versus the Islanders in Philadelphia, and we got the we got just, you know, the same amount of energy, same, you know, big bumps from Tama early on. You know, I Tama's such a great heel, you know, complaining about the hair pulls and stuff, and just, you know, his facial expressions. He just looks like a mean motherfucker, but, you know, same time, just, you know, not just mean, but also like kind of a coward at the same time. Just, you know, the perfect heel. You want somebody who can combine that meanness with cowardice, because those are the two qualities in human beings that pretty much nobody likes, right? So I think Tama does a pretty good job combining those two. And then the babyfaces on the flip side do a great job, you know, with all that high energy stuff that everybody just loves. And so they, you know, Tama's doing like the timeout stuff. He's doing the extended hand and then, you know, kneeling down on the ground. You know, a lot of the stuff that Eddie Guerrero would end up doing too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, you know, and that's the type of stuff that I know that I love, that my father loves. It's just very entertaining. Is very entertaining heel shtick. Tama rakes the eyes, but Tito scoops the legs on Haku, which we'll see in some other matches where they'll use the eye rake, they'll tag out, but then the baby faces still come back. You know, it's a big thing. You know, just one eye rake isn't going to put Tito or Rick Martel down. You know, they're world class wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And so then they do the backslide battle, which I thought was cool. I thought that was an interesting test of strength.
Yeah, I liked it too.
I like that a lot. I'm a big fan of tests of strength.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they're like little battles inside the overarching battle. So if I was doing match layouts for people, you would always see a lot of tests of strength. I don't know how people would feel about that, but that's what you would get if I was booking. So they go right. So a lot of these shines use the arm as a base, which is common in WWF tag team wrestling. I know we've brought it up before, but arm was the base hold. A lot of nice arm drags. I was watching. So I watched Becky Lynch versus Charlotte last night.
Mm-hmm.
Man, Becky Lynch, what an arm drag! I'm very reminiscent of Rick Martel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I pay attention to it. Watch. Have in mind how Rick Martel does his arm drag. Mm-hmm. And then watch Becky Lynch do an arm drag.
Hmm.
Very similar. And I have to say, about equal levels of hotness, don't you agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
I mean, as my dad pointed out, she has perfect facial features, and I do agree. And Rick Martel has very nice facial features.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Haku does the hair pull into the ropes, which I think is great, and then Tama crashes down from the top. I think that, you know, and what I really like about the 1980s is how much emphasis there is on the top rope. You know, when somebody comes crashing down from up high, you know, that's a lot of force. You know, you already have enough weight as it is, and now you're using the extra weight and you're falling down on somebody. And so I feel like that's a great transition. And, it, you know, they milk it for everything it's worth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is a very interesting heat segment. I feel like this is a heat segment in a non-kayfabe, well, in a lot of ways, you know, it's a heat segment, you know, beating on Rick Martel. But in a non-kayfabe way, it's almost a war of attrition against the fan. Okay? So what I mean by that is, so they start off with nerve pinches, right? But there is some shoulder psychology because Haku does a shoulder breaker. So at first I'm kind of like, nerve pinches, like, ugh. You
know? Yeah, I know.
Like, you know how you don't like the front chantry? Do not like the nerve pinch.
Yeah, I'm not probably a fan either. Favorite.
And but then it just goes on for so long that Rick Martel's selling just like it wears you down, like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as entertaining from like a high spot perspective as the last heat segment, but right. It's more dramatic.
Right.
Because Rick Martel's selling in this match is like off the fucking charts.
Mm-hmm.
Language. Sorry for swearing. Maybe that should be my New Year's resolution for this year.
Too late.
Too late. And he, you know, there's so many hope spots.
Mm-hmm.
He does the reverse crossbody hope spot, which is always one of my favorites, where, you know, he does the cross, he springs off the ropes and he misses it, crashes, burns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like this great, you know, they got the, you know, there is some moves, you know, they do the atomic drop, the crescent kick. And it's just, but it's the way Martel is selling, it really is gripping in a different way than the offensive heavy version of the Boston match, which was a week prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what the transition is to the hot tag?
What is it?
It's the transition to all the hot tags, I think, is the
Haku missing us. Yeah. Exactly.
And Martel is selling his ass off. Do you just, I remember the, I think this is the match because they all kind of blend together. This is the one where he's like crawling, you know, he's got mm-hmm. the sweat. He's got the anguish look on his face. You know, really, you know, if people want to look, I mean, obviously, I don't know how many aspiring wrestlers we have that listen to this, but if you are an aspiring wrestler, watch Rick Martel, watch how he sells. Take time to sell. It's valuable. Mm-hmm. Tito, House of Fire, Tama, goes up and down. You know, he does the big, you know, he got him by the legs and throws him up in the air. Tito goes for the figure four. We've seen this story before. I rhyme there. Haku flying headbutt wins the match.
Yeah.
Couldn't rhyme headbutt with anything off the top of my head. Wanted to.
A haiku. For Haku.
Haku.
I really like this match. This was my favorite, in fact, of all the matches.
This is your favorite match of all the matches?
That we looked at for this show, yes.
I don't know if I agree with that, so.
Okay, that's fine. I won't hold it against you. No, I just, Martel just put in, like you just described.
This is the best Rick Martel performance.
What a performance. What a face in peril. Great heat segment there. Martel just milked it for everything. I loved it.
I feel like I should like it the most because it's the selling is the best in it.
Yeah, and it's
maybe I've become a Spot Monkey fan.
Damn it. It was the longest of the matches. This one had the most time to really tell a story of all the matches we watched, I think. I'll back up a bit and go from the start. Super hot start. They storm the ring. Girls in cars blaring as they.
Oh yeah, this is the New Jack one.
Yeah.
Like with instead of Natural Born Killers, it was Girls in Cars.
Yeah. How cool is that?
Way cooler than fucking Natural Born Killers.
Yeah. A lot of similar spots from the previous match. But definitely not a carbon copy of that match. Dick, God bless him, calls Haku Sika at one point.
I missed that.
Oh, well, and he does it again in a subsequent.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I remember that in the December match, I think.
So he's totally having flashbacks here. The crowd was, you know, the crowd was maybe not large, but they were into this match. There was a pretty noticeable Tito chant, lots of noise. You know, when you have a 4,500, when you have 4,500 attendance, you know it's going to be the hardest of the hardcore fans. So they're going to
especially
be,
when it's Jerry Allen versus Frenchie Martin.
Yeah, they just had to survive that classic, and so Philly is out in full force, noise wise. The Islanders. Great heel team with their tricks, no tags, blatant interference. They get it. They're and especially Tama just is totally. Well, I'd say both guys really just have embraced this heel role.
The heel mess. Actually, I forgot to mention something. When they were choking Martel with that rope,
right?
Was that not one of the best selling jobs you've ever?
Yeah. That was beautiful. So that was another thing that they brought in with the heel tactics was the rope. And Tama, you mentioned his facials and his reactions. When Martel missed that crossbody, the reaction by Tama was just great, where he does this arrogant, you know, just looks out at the crowd, kind of, you know, does the pull his hair back sort of thing. I'm so cool. Mm-hmm. I'm so smooth sort of thing. Just great, great work. Yeah, like I said, they're just loving being heels. So that makes this even better because Martel and Santana are great baby faces. So great dynamic here. Back to the Martel face in peril. He just had the crowd in the palm of his hand here. Big hot tag to Tito. Oh, and yeah, I guess we should mention, you know, for the Can-Am connection, it was always Zinc doing the face in peril and Martel doing the hot tag, and now we've got the reverse, basically, with Strikeforce.
Yeah, but they do Martell as the hot tag.
Yeah, they do. But for the most part, in the Canada connection, it was mostly Zink doing the face in peril. Now it's
most. Yeah, I would say that makes more sense, don't you, or no? I think it could go either way with Martell and Tito.
Yeah, Martell is great in both roles.
I would say Tito is better at offense than he is at selling.
It's very close too, though. It works.
When I think of Tito, I think of I think of his punches. I think of his big comebacks.
Yeah, I mean it works.
I think more so than in his selling. Whereas Ricky Martell, I think he's all time in both. So I think if you're gonna push it, I would go with the setup that they have.
Right.
I think that's the right one.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not complaining. I'm just pointing out that they've swapped the dynamic.
Right. I was just wondering if you thought it was the way to go, or do you think Tito Santana is the babyface in peril and Rick Martel is the hot tag was the way to go?
No. Well, I don't know really, because I mean it's like they're both great, because Martel was great as the hot tag in the Canem connection. Now he's
right.
Yeah. Great as the face.
I was
apparel.
Just saying, I think Martell is slightly better at selling, and then so good at offense.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point. So you mentioned.
I could see somebody arguing the other way, just because Ricky Martell is the most electric thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, who wants to be denied a Ricky Martell hot tag?
I don't know.
Fire.
Why do you deny sex from a man?
Exactly. but that's the thing. I mean, he's so good at both. It's really he gives pleasure.
I don't know. It's hard to say. You could have go either way.
Yeah, he gives pleasure both ways.
I mean, we're going Goo Goo Gaga over selling. I haven't heard this much Goo Goo Gaga about selling since D-Bot and Blair.
Well, see, I really like a great face in peril. It's one of my favorite things in wrestling. And Martel, this match, it was really good. Like, he milked it just to the perfect length, I think. So very similar finish to the Boston match with the figure four spot and the Islanders getting the tainted victory. I thought this was a really solid match. I've pretty much said all I can. All action again, just like the Boston match. There was really no pausing at all to slow things down. Great pace and timing. I really, really enjoyed this match. This is October 10th from Philly, so that's another one for listeners to definitely go out of your way to check out. It's pretty great. So now we've had Boston, Philly, and now we're into New York City, MSG. This is October 16th, and this one's a bit different. This is a best two out of three falls. Now, they've already had one match in MSG, which, as I mentioned, and as we know from the previous show, the Islanders won that one in controversial fashion. So this is the rematch here. Basically, this would be the last match between the two teams in MSG. And it's best two out of three falls, which was something that was used, definitely used on Saturday Night's Main Event, as we've seen, quite often, almost always for the tag team matches on there. And then sporadically otherwise. So this one's interesting. It was a sellout crowd at MSG that night. We have Gorilla Monsoon and debuting on commentary, Nick Bockwinkel. This was, he would do a few shows. He was coming right from the AWA. He had just retired as a full-time competitor and was doing heel commentary on MSG cards. It's kind of a little-known part of his career, but it did happen. And so, yeah, here we go. Marty, what'd you think of this two out of three falls match from MSG?
Bach didn't know what to say when Gorilla posited that the brain may be in drag somewhere in the building. I think that happened. I think we witnessed a match where that happened already, or am I just having flashbacks?
The brain in drag? I believe you're having flashbacks.
No, I'm having flashbacks to Gorilla saying the brain's in drag, but brain wasn't actually in drag.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know. Is that an angle or something? I don't know.
I know he definitely did drag at some point. I have a vivid image in my head, but I can't tell you the context of that.
Okay. So you dream of Bobby the Brain Heenan as a woman?
Yeah, I've watched too much wrestling.
that is you are one sick puppy.
Well, mostly I dream about Ricky Martel. So
I dream about Kelly Kelly.
Well, good for you.
So Strikeforce, they want to start off hot. They try to start off early, like they did in the September match, but the Islanders are more wary of this and they bail. But as you would expect, I mean, Strikeforce very pissed about, you know, the months of attack. Well, especially on Martel by the Islanders. So they start off the match red hot. They use the headlock rather than the armbar as the base in this match. Tito hits a pretty sweet Fez press and actually, you know, no punches follow it up. So it's actually a Fez press. Like,
yeah.
That somebody actually does a Fez press. So.
Mm-hmm.
Haku hits a back suplex out of a headlock, shades of Mr. Saito. I would say that Ricky Martel, the one reason I think he's better than most WWF babyfaces is he's more apt to mix in hope spots. Some WWF babyfaces I find just rely on selling. I think Ricky Martel mixes it up between the two for more dynamic match.
Yep, I agree.
He tags in Tito, who immediately goes in for the kill with the figure four.
Mm-hmm. And
break it up. I think that makes sense. You know, you want to break this motherfucker's knee. Excuse my language. So Haku, you know, feeling like, hey, I don't want my knee broken, goes and he starts paying back Tito's knee. So there's a lot of knee psychology, which is pretty cool. We don't usually get that much limb psychology out of the heels, so that was nice. And so I thought Tito Santana did a great job in this babyface and peril segment. I thought he was really good at selling. And I felt like the Islanders were very relentless on the attack. As usual, Ricky Martel, his French-Canadian temper gets the best of him. And he inadvertently allows the Islanders to keep, you know, double-teaming him, like the double-diving headbutt they use. And that allows them to pick up the first fall. So the Islanders go up 1-0. So babyface is, they don't score early. I thought they would, you know, being red hot. So the heels go up 1-0. So the Strikeforce has got to come back. The Islanders keep the full court press up. No respite in between the falls. But Martel stands over the fallen and hurt Tito. He's challenging to take both the Islanders on. That's Ricky Martel style right there, baby. Uh-huh. I'll take you both on at the same time. And I love those types of visuals. Because, you know, that's just, you know, I love that type of camaraderie. That's the type of thing that makes, you know, pro wrestling so great.
Yeah.
Second fall is wicked short. They work on the knee before Martel reverses a cradle attempt for Strikeforce to even it up. And the crowd erupts.
Yeah.
I thought of you, Kelly, when that happened, because I know crowd eruption happens, you get happy.
I do.
And I think the babyface cheating is justified by based on the fact the Islanders were cheating like motherfuckers the entire time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Total totally. Assholes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they were, you know, they've been assholes since the dawn of, since the dawn of the angle.
Yep, yep.
But the thing is, because Martel reverse the cradle, who has to start the second fall? Tito Santana.
Yeah.
So, the third fall, I mean.
Yeah.
So, you're tied 1-1, but you got your weaker member in there. So, our heroes aren't out of the woods yet. So, we got Haku slapping them around. Okay. So, I admit, I noticed it. They were not working. They weren't in sync. So, Tito and Haku were working the right side.
Right.
Mexican style. And then... You know, Tito, baby, arriba. But Tama, being from fucking America, or where he's from, was he born in Samoa or was he born in America?
I'm not 100% sure on that.
Anyways, used to working American style, was working the left side.
Right. And Monsoon is Pauline points that out too. Yeah.
Right, and Monsoon actually claims that Haku is the one who fucked up, but Tito's been selling the right leg, and Haku is the one who initiated the legwork, so it's actually Tama who fucked up. So, as usual, Gorilla fucks up. Because Gorilla Monsoon is the biggest fuck up of all time. So, anyways, after all that, the Islanders, who won the first fall with the double headbutt, go for that. Mm-hmm. But you cannot hit the same spot in a match in America. It's like it's a rule, right, Kelly?
Yeah, basically.
Don't try to hit the same fucking spot in the same match. Yeah. It's not going to work.
No.
So, of course, we get Wee Wee Ricky Mattel! And the garden is rocking, baby! Yeah, yeah. It's backdrop. It strikes. It's the reverse crossbody. Haku thinks he has Martel, but you can't hold Ricky Martel down, baby. No. He moves out of the way, causing Tama to send Haku crashing into the apron. Martel gets the reverse sunset flip victory. Strike Force wins. Everyone goes happy. Everything's right with the world. 1987's a banner year for the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Because Strike Force, baby, is here to stay.
Awesome.
Ricky Martel, the way he celebrated, he celebrated like I was like talking like America just like conquered the world or something. Like it was just like the biggest celebration ever. World title celebration, like.
Yep. Oh no. He so much emotion. I mean, that's why the fans loved him. That's why I love him.
That's why I love Rick. If I saw Rick Martel, I would tell him, and I would look into his eyes and tell him, I love you. Yes. I would mean it.
Yes, I would too. And Tito, I mean, as a kid at this time, Tito was my favorite wrestler. So that's...
You had great taste in professional wrestlers, Kelly.
What did I know? I know.
You did a lot, because you had Tito Santana as your favorite wrestler.
I know. And I was embarrassed to admit it, too, sometimes, because, you know...
Why would you be embarrassed?
Well, Tito really wasn't that cool compared to Hogan and the others, Savage and stuff. It was kind of a secret love affair at that time.
Well, I'm glad you've come out and exposed it, because I think it's a... warranted love.
Oh yes, no. I feel ashamed that I ever denied my life.
Peter and Jesus. Ellie and Gito.
Anyway, to this match. This was a good one too. Pretty fast.
This is actually, I think this might have been my favorite match.
This was your favorite? Yeah. I mean
this is my favorite one.
This is my second favorite. Pretty fast paced, 2 out of 3 falls.
Yeah, that would be my only complaint, was if you're going to do 2 out of 3 falls, I wish there's a little bit more meat on the bone.
Yeah, it was kind of a greatest hits of spots from the previous matches that we saw. They go right to the figure four by Tito very quickly in this match, whereas in the other matches, that's at the end, of course. My note is it was basically a sped up version of the previous two matches. The first fall was, but then we get the leg work, which was different and which isn't repeated in any of the other matches.
Right.
Yeah. So that was different. Changing it up a bit and then we had a cut to the Primetime studio. So this was taken from Primetime Wrestling and Monsoon claims Heenan was at ringside. And they're talking, and it's Monsoon and Heenan, of course, in the Primetime studio, but Heenan wasn't at ringside during this match, and Heenan doesn't correct Monsoon at all or anything.
That's probably because Heenan couldn't remember if he was
probably
actually...
not.
And he's probably was at ringside. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, the thing is, he's not at ringside for any of these matches, other than the singles match, I believe.
He was at ringside for the September match.
Okay.
Because he stomped on his hand. That's the only spot I remember.
Right, but for all the matches we watched for this show, it was just the singles match between Tito and...
Right, but I think most likely Madison Square Garden, like, if you're Bobby the Brain Heenan and you can't remember... If you've been at the match or not, and the match was at Madison Square Garden, he would probably have thought he was at it.
Right. I'm just wondering why he wasn't at these matches.
Oh, yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
at it.
Like,
yeah,
other than, like I said, other than the singles match that we're going to look at, he isn't at ringside for any of these tags.
Well, the singles match he's at is a TV taping.
Right. Yeah, he would have been there, of course, for all the other matches, yeah.
But he didn't go... Did he go to Boston and Philadelphia?
That's true. Good point. Philly is totally an anti-manager arena, where...
Is that because of the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission?
It could be. There was some pretty strict rules in Pennsylvania. Yeah, so I don't think managers ever worked Philly, or very rarely. Boston, though, I think managers work Boston. I'm pretty sure.
I feel like I remember. Oh yeah, I've definitely seen Jimmy Hart in
yeah.
Boston.
Oh yeah, and Heenan definitely worked there as well. So anyway, I don't know. Maybe he was taking some time off or something. But anyway, he's not
taking me time for the brain.
Not there. So we cut back to the match, and I was hoping it wasn't going to be clipped, and it wasn't. So that was cool. And so Tito's been, Tito eventually succumbed to the constant double teams for the, first fall. And it was cool at the start of the second fall. The Islanders are like animals pacing, you know, ready to pounce on Tito before the second fall officially starts. I thought that was a nice touch. And then, yeah, we get the, reversal of the small package for the second fall, which is the finish of the year for, well, I guess it was started in 1986, and it's continued into 1987.
Well, I mean, the small package continues to be, and the schoolboy continues to be one of the greatest WWF finishes of all time.
Right, but I mean specifically the reversal of
the reversal. Yes, yeah. It was Bulldog's Heart Foundation.
Had a couple and a few other matches too. Yeah. So it was overused at this point.
I think
point.
Vince McMahon really likes the small package.
Yeah. I think he does too.
Vince McMahon likes the small package. That's what it is. That's why he likes Craig DeGeorge.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
wasn't my greatest? No, maybe.
Yeah. this wasn't as time. It wasn't timed as well though, because Tito had to hold down Tama for a good like 10 seconds before the in total counting the three counts. So
man, Kelly getting nitpicky up in
I head. that's a pet peeve of mine, I have to admit, is the pin that's too long for believability.
The too long of a pin.
Yeah, you know, especially like on a small package, you know. But anyway, yes.
Takes a lot to piss off Kelly, but there you go.
I have my quirks, and that's one of them. The third fall, the crowd was definitely just fired up, red hot, and the pop at the end for the win was pretty gigantic. So yeah, this was a really solid one too. I'm gonna go with the Philly match still as my favorite, but this was definitely worth a watch as well. Basically, the first three matches we've reviewed are all definitely worthwhile seeking out.
Yeah, I think I like this match more because of the feel-good moment.
Yeah.
Martel gets the win, which is important that Martel gets it.
Right.
He was the one feuding with the Islanders for longer.
Yep.
I also feel like this is the blow-off to the Madison Square Garden series.
That's right. Because, yes, it started as a singles series with Martel against Tama, of course, and then Haku.
Yeah.
And then now two tag matches. So, yeah, this is the blow off. And, yeah, perfectly.
So I think that's why I prefer it. I will say, at the end of the day, I mean, if we're comparing all of them, mm-hmm. like the September Madison Square Garden match.
Yeah, that's the best one.
Is the best of them all.
Yeah.
And I think after this match, they kind of stop. They become title matches after this match.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I feel like the heat isn't there. It becomes just the normal WWF tag team title program.
Yes, very good point.
So I think this is the kind of the cutoff. Everything before this match is very good to excellent,
mm-hmm.
Which I would call the September match excellent. The rest of the stuff, I don't think they ever had a bad match. It's just the after this moment, yeah, the matches took a little bit of a dip in the heat department.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah, they definitely do. But before we get there, we have one singles match to look at. Thought since we looked at singles matches on the previous show that we'd take a look at this one. It's a different matchup. It's Tito against Haku. And this was from Milwaukee. It was taped October the 6th, and it aired October the 22nd on primetime.
Was the Crusher in the one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, the Crusher. I think he might make my greatest wrestler ever.
Well, there you go. There's no reason why he shouldn't if you like him.
Him, and I'll plug a match that I gave this 4 3/4 stars. I know we don't do ratings on this show. It's a tag team match, so don't worry. Mm-hmm. It's the Crusher, and I always sound like a 4-year-old when I feel like I say the Crusher, and and Greg Gagne versus the Flying versus the Sheik. Sheik Ayatollah Blackwell and Sheik Adnan Al-Kasi in a tag team steel cage match. AWA was the kings of the steel cage tag team.
Yeah, looked at that match.
Awesome match. Really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, no, I think they used the Crusher. Well, he actually did a spot as a machine in 1986.
This is true.
Crusher machine when they were in Milwaukee, I'm assuming.
And then there was definitely a Hogan Crusher promo.
Yeah, I believe they tagged. They used him quite a bit in the early years when they were breaking into Minnesota and AWA. Towns. Yeah, by 87 he was pretty much done. Well, he was pretty much done 5 years before that, but
hey, that awesome match happened in like 83, 84.
So. Yes, okay, no, sorry.
Mind your P's and Q's.
I was being a bit snarky there. So anyway, we have an unreal commentary team for this one.
Unreal. I haven't heard the term unreal in a long time.
Yeah. Of Bruce Pritchard, who would go on to be Brother Love and go on to be Vince McMahon's right-hand man, basically, behind the scenes. Mike McGurk, who was a female, if you're unaware. It's
confusing.
Yeah, the only female commentator, basically.
And her name's Mike.
Yeah, I know. And then rounding out this team is Johnny V, who...
Johnny V.
I really... do not like as a commentator. So yeah, this is a train wreck of a commentary team, but it's a short match, so it's not too bad. Tito and Haku, what'd you think of this, Marty?
I was like a short little fun TV match. I'll say this. Haku got to throw some suplexes in this match.
He
doesn't throw that many suplexes in the tag matches, but he threw a nice gut wrench, had a vertical in there, Probably should be happy with this match. This is a Prav match.
Yeah, another shoulder breaker.
They did the backslide battle again.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of the drop toe holds. Tito had a nice drop toe hold in this match.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, it's just standard shine, heat segment. Tito got his feet up when Haku was charging the corner.
Yeah.
Hits the flying burrito. Probably going to win the match, but Tama gets on the top rope, so Martel gets up there, and, well, you know, melee ensues. Good stuff.
Yeah, it was short. I know. It doesn't compare to the Martel matches.
The Martel epics.
Yeah, especially the one against Tama, of course, which was sensational. Yeah, this is just a quickie. Basically, it's like a face in peril sequence from a tag team match. Is what I wrote. Basically, you could just take that out of the match, and that's what you would have here. So, yeah, anyway, I wanted to check it out just to see how Tito worked in this setting.
No shame.
No shame at all. All right, so we have 3 more matches to finish up this show, to finish up this feud. But before we do that, we'll send you to the plugs for the shows on the PTBN network and the PWO PTBN network, and check out my super enthusiastic ad here that we recorded a few nights ago.
Shit, we have a new PWO PTBN ad?
Yeah, we do. Every few months there. It's definitely not my finest hour as an ad man. Anyway, Check it out, folks, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including Main Event, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super shows. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Phil Schneider's Digging in the Crates, and our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse. And join Pro Wrestling Only's Will and I on the Dangerous Alliance podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to enjoy as well. We feature the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops, and the TJ McClune Show, featuring great guests from around the world of sports journalism. PTBN also proudly features the Richard the Mailman podcast, specializing in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN also is the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
We got a lot of great shows about pro wrestling, and we put them all on one feed that you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or, of course, at PlaceToBeNation.com.
That's Pro Wrestling Only, PlaceToBeNation, Podcast Network.
There's a lot of podcasts out there, but you won't find the historical depth, analytical insight, and great debate anywhere else. From old-school wrestling talk to current-day reaction shows, there's something for everyone.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Oh, and check out our complete archive at PlaceToBeNation.com. Just click on the podcast logo for links to all of our shows, as well as subscribing options. Place to Be Nation, the only place to be for pro wrestling podcasts.
Okay, welcome back, and we're in the home stretch here. Three more matches. So the big news in between the last match and this next match was that on October 27th in Syracuse, the Strike Force defeated the Hart Foundation Superstars TV taping for the tag titles, and it aired November the 7th.
So wow.
The very day of these next two matches was when the title switch aired. So a lot of people in attendance probably weren't even aware that Strikeforce were tag team champions now, especially in Boston, because this one's a matinee.
Yeah. Superstars on, like 11 in the morning.
Yeah. So it would have been a pretty cool surprise for fans in attendance there. To see the Strike Force come out with the tag belts. I remember watching this match that match as a kid, the win over the Hart Foundation. It was a very, very big moment in my early fandom. I was, of course, a huge Tito fan, and a title switch was rare to see on TV back then.
And so did you still deny Tito after winning a championship?
I don't know.
Now that your boy's a winner, you can come out and say, yes, Tito Santana is a wrestler. He's a champion.
Yeah, maybe I did. But yeah, I can remember watching that match as a 10-year-old. It was pretty cool.
Well, glad you had that moment.
Yes. And so here we are, November 7th in Boston. The newly crowned tag team champions, Strike Force, against the Islanders. One more time, Marty, take it away.
Yeah, so we got Bockwinkel and the Duke of Dorchester.
Yeah, here we go.
What a combo. Actually, Box says that Canadians have hot tempers. Is this true, Kelly?
Oh, yeah. That's a total Canadian stereotype.
I think he meant French Canadians.
Well, then, of course.
Which might be true. But, yeah, he said Canadians when he said it. So right. I thought that was Though, yeah, like, even, like, I was watching, like, a random – I was trying to watch Dean Ambrose on SportsCenter last night.
Okay.
And, like, I guess we missed it or something. But anyways, Barry Melrose, who's, like, the most Canadian man who ever Canadianed. Sounds so friggin' Canadian.
Right.
The SportsCenter – the Canadians didn't do too well in junior hockey, which is, like, a big deal, right?
Oh, very big deal, yeah.
Yeah, so they did horribly. And he was trying to get Barry Melrose to get pissed. Barry Melrose just got sad, like really sad. It was like, oh my god, this guy was trying to have fun with Barry Melrose, and he was bumming hard. And I was like, oh, Canadians don't get angry; they get sad.
Well, I mean, other countries have religion. Canada has hockey, something like that.
Well, that's not true. I guess Vancouver, you guys are little, you freaks.
Bruins
guys, and you just fucking lost it.
They've rioted after losing the Stanley Cup Finals now. And Montreal, hell, they're famous for their riots after hockey games over the years. Yes.
Oh, yeah. So I guess Canadians do have their temper. It's just mostly about hockey.
Yep.
Not professionally.
No.
All right, so we start off. We got Tio Santana working the headlock into that Thez press, that beautiful Thez press. Haku misses a headbutt. Ricky Martel, he's on fire, baby. Haku misses a crossbody. Haku's not hitting his spots. What do you think, Kelly?
No, he's up. Off.
He's off. There's no Bobby the Brain in his corner.
Yeah.
Crisscross, night, and then double punch. Haku is clubbering, and we go into the front chancery. And Tama comes flying off the top, double team, another front chancery, double team, Tama leg drop. Hey, I don't remember this match as I'm reading my notes. He drives Tito's head into the apron. Okay, that jogged my memory. Martel gets a hot tag, and then there's it's small package victory. For Ricky Martel, I honestly don't have a recollection of this match, and I watched it like 3 hours ago.
Well, there's two referees.
Yeah, but I remember them being totally useless. Like, the second referee didn't do anything except for Kyle Mann.
Exactly. Weren't preventing any less cheating than one referee would in a match. And he was just there to call the pin on a cute finish, basically. Yeah.
So there was a kick to – there was the crescent kick to Tama while he was holding Santana. He dropped down. That was the transition to the hot tag.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Because I do not – I don't think there was a transition from the shine to the heat segment.
Oh, really?
I don't think so. I just have Haku clubbering. So, I don't know. Not a very memorable match. I thought it was fine at the time. I was like, oh, yeah, that was good. But I guess I, like, totally don't remember shit about it. So, there you go. Can't remember everything, right? I did watch 6 minutes in a row.
There you go. Yeah, it all kind of blurs together. Yeah, I felt this was...
That was probably the weakest match of them all.
I think it maybe was. The stipulation didn't really work. Well, I mean, hey... Gorilla Monsoon finally gets his dream scenario with the two referees, and he's not even really that excited about it.
No, he's really not that jazzed.
No.
I think in part of him, it's like, you know, you've always wanted this one thing, and then you finally get it, and it's like, eh.
You know? Yeah, I guess so.
You know, and not only that, like, there's a reason there shouldn't be two referees. Stupid, you know? It's like having an instant replay in professional wrestling.
Right,
it sucks.
Right. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're going to have the stipulation, at least... you know, use it in a way, you know.
Oh, yeah, totally. They didn't use it at all.
Like, the guy just stood there and then sternly waved his finger at them for double-teaming, but he didn't even communicate with the other referee and say, hey, these guys were cheating, you know. Anyway, he comes in and he counts the pin as the other referee is distracted. And this like you mentioned before the break, the heat seems to be gone from this feud, and now they're kind of just going through the motions. and throwing in weird gimmicks with the referees. I mean, the finish was hot, you know. The crowd was definitely into it. It wasn't like a heatless match or a dull match, but it just didn't really.
Sounds like you've been spoiled, Kelly.
Yeah, well, we have been spoiled. Totally, that's what it is. All the matches we've seen so far with the tags, with the singles, with Ricky Martel, we've seen a ton of really good matches.
Yeah.
And now we're getting, to matches that aren't horrible or bad or anything, but the bar has been set pretty high, and these last matches can only be kind of disappointing. So, yeah, I didn't think too much of that. And now we go down to Philly, same day in the evening. Same stipulation, two referees. Here, though, we have two bearded referees that look like twins, basically.
I didn't even notice.
But they're not. They're two different men. They're not related. I mean.
Yes, they're definitely two different men.
Yeah, they're not the same man. Split and cloned or whatever. But no, they're not related at all, even though they look like they could be brothers. So we have the same stipulation, but this match is a little bit different than the Boston match. What did you think of it, Marty?
Yeah, it is different. I thought it's definitely a little bit longer. Or is it longer? I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
I have more notes for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was very similar. There's the Fez press at the beginning by Tito.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the urgency and the energy from Martel was more noticeable. I can picture Ricky Martel in this match, with high knee action. Love those high knees.
Yes, high stepping.
High stepping to the victories, man. Thought it was a very good face shine. You have the Haku eye rake, but then Martel does the single leg scoop, which we saw in a different match, but I don't know if we saw it in the Boston match, so it's slightly different. So Tito takes exception to someone making the save on a pin, and that leads to double teaming, which is the transition to the heat segment, which I thought was a good transition. This is when I wrote front chancery, Kelly. All exclamation points. There was a couple front chanceries in this match, so.
Yeah. Well, I have a note from this match that I wrote. A match cannot be great if it has a front face lock in it. That's just all I can say.
Wow, there's a lot of tag team matches with front face locks. You must not like tag team wrestling.
I'm thinking of Don Morocco versus Pedro Morales. Fests from 1981.
I thought we were going to have to rename the show Singles Wrestling back again. What I actually wrote at one point, what is the purpose of two refs?
Yeah.
Like, I had no fucking clue. Like,
no. And DeGeorge on commentary buries the whole idea or concept.
Yeah, when Craig DeGeorge buries something, it's like Michael Cole burying you. It's a death sentence.
Yeah.
Not only that, Tama yanks the freaking who's the heat segment? Tito. He yanks Tito all the way in, in plain view of the friggin' ref who's in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
This is like they're blatantly cheating. Like, get control of your shit, ref.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, same transition. Haku accidentally crescent kick to Tama. I like the term crescent kick. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too.
I like it better than super kick.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of super kick. How about sabot kick?
That's
another variation.
Yeah. I like the crescent kick. There's a lot of super kicks in wrestling right now.
Yes, there is.
I'm okay with the Young Bucks doing it because I think they're kind of like funny in their like weird way, but right. Dolph Ziggler has got the worst super kick I think I've ever seen.
He's bastardized or prostituted the super kick or something. It's just...
He can't do it.
It's meaningless now.
He's not very good at it. But anyways, lots of super kicks nowadays. People listening to this like 10 years in the future. That's what we're dealing with in 2016.
The great super kick... deluge of 2016.
Super kick party! That's what Steve Corino yells during the Young Bucks matches. Yeah. I think Young Bucks can get away with it because it's kind of a joke.
Right. Well, yeah, it's supposed to be ironic. Yeah.
So, I'm okay with that. For some reason, I give the Young Bucks a pass on a lot of things. I just think they're very entertaining at what they do. I think it makes a lot more sense, too, because it's usually, like, my big problem with a lot of moves in singles wrestling is, like, all the waiting that needs to happen. In Young Bucks matches, the other guy usually holds the other person. It's like, it really helps a lot. So, that's my defense for the Young Bucks. Too sweet.
I'll take your word for it.
They're just too sweet! So they hit the Flying Burrito. It's a melee. Oh, yeah, they were going to do the small package finish they did in Boston, but they said, fuck it, we're going to do the double DQ, because this is Philly, baby, and nobody wins in Philly. I thought the funniest line was, I think it was Craig said, or it was, I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but they said, I think Tito is secretly glad it's over while Tito is getting his ass kicked. they were still beating him down after the match, and he goes, yeah, I think Tito's secretly glad it's over. It's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And Rick Martel, he's got a chair, and at some point Dick Graham says he's turned on.
Yeah, Martel.
Somebody's
is,
turned on. And I'm just Martel thinking Kyle Rudman's turned on, that's for sure.
Martel is turned on, man. Yeah, that's classic Dick right there.
You could have said turned on city.
Turned on
like
city.
That city at the end of things.
Yeah. He's such a leftover of the 70s. Like, he's. Yeah. As far as Dick's concerned, it's still 1979 out there. And Super 8.
Hell yeah, baby.
Super 8 is still filming the proceedings at ringside. And I do have a Super 8 update coming up. This was slightly better than the Boston match.
Yeah, I'd say slightly better.
The referee gimmick, I don't know. I mean, the finish looks kind of stupid with the two refs. It still ends up in a DQ.
A double disqualification.
You're right. The refs were getting pushed down and roughed up, and then yeah, it's funny that they. I guess they decided they wanted to extend it for one more match in Philly, but not so in Boston for whatever reason.
I guess that's true. Is there a difference between a double disqualification and a no contest?
They're almost synonymous. It's like,
I would think they're synonymous, right?
Yeah,
I can't think of what the difference would be.
A matter of wording, basically. Yeah.
I like the term "no contest."
But. Yeah, I do too. You pretty much summed this one up. It's very similar to the Boston match, and yeah, just. Nothing too terribly special, unfortunately, considering the talent involved. Although the Islanders still working very, very well as heels. And they really hit their stride at this point as a team as we end 1987 for them. We're ending it right here. One last match in Philly, December the 5th. For this match, and now, you know, we've had the gimmick match already, and now we're going back to just a regular match. Basically, there was no escalation of stips. This would have been this should have been a cage match, don't you think? Or
hell yeah, or, I'm down for a tag team cage
match. Especially considering the last match ended in a double DQ. You had to up the ante and have like a no DQ type match, no DQ setting.
Man, really complaining about that booking, Kelly.
Yeah, I'm furious about 30 years ago booking.
You're really, man. You were quite. Yeah, you're doing the smart marks proud.
Yeah, but doesn't it make sense?
I'm just giving you shit. Yeah,
I'm not sure why they had like a third match where they basically went back to where they were at the beginning and, you know, anyway.
I don't know. Vince was asleep at the wheel.
Somebody was asleep at the switch. But anyway, as far as Super 8 goes, there's a very large man sitting in Super 8's old spot with a full beard. And I really, really wanted this to be Super 8. And Super 8, of course, for listeners out there who don't listen to Titans of Wrestling.
No, good listener to Titans of Wrestling.
Yeah.
Cast going today.
There you
and
go.
I'm saying that because I'm only on a couple of them. Most don't have me on it, and those are the best ones.
Anyway, Super 8 has become like a mascot of ours. He was the first time we saw him, he was, of course, filming wrestling from the Spectrum with his huge Super 8 camera at ringside. And ever since, he turned up in most of the Philly shows from that era, late 70s, early 80s, but he vanishes at some point. And I really wanted this to be him. And it was the same size, like almost identical body shape. But I don't think this was Super 8. I looked at the face pretty closely and no, I don't think it was. But there was a lot of hair. So you never know. Maybe it was Super 8 hiding behind all that facial hair. But to the match, Marty, this is it. We've come to the end of our exploration.
Yeah. Oh, actually, funny note. Guess what shirt I'm wearing right now?
I don't know. Which one?
New World Order for life.
Oh, there you go.
It's just too sweet. Yeah. Love me some NWO. All right. Philadelphia, December 1987. World Tag Team titles on the line. I love the beginning. You know why? It's Ricky Martel. He goes up top. Clap. Hurricane Rana. Love that spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun spot. Yeah. He just looks so happy. Like the man is just like, he's happiness personified. Like, if you could bottle up his happiness, it would be the number one selling drug in the world.
Pretty much.
You're fucking happy man. Tama takes two big bumps, one off the Tito. He does. So the Tito drop kick to the floor. This one, I think, was even kind of more wicked than the Boston one was ridiculous. You know, he literally just leaped over the rail. This one, he wanted to do the same thing, but he ended up just taking a header into a chair.
Yeah, that's right.
And I like the fact that they did the belly flop back into the ring instead of at the beginning. It really like stood out, I thought. I thought, you know, you like his belly flop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I dug that. So I like that a lot. So the strike force works over Haku's legs. I thought it was very entertaining, high energy. Tama breaks up a figure four attempt. Did you catch the announcers calling that a new Strike Force move?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I did actually write in my notes. I guess I must have forgot it. I watched it, even though this was the last match. I ended up watching it first by accident, and I did note that yes, they called Haku Sika in this match, and the other guy could not pronounce Tama's name at all. But yeah, we knew that anyway. So Haku. So Haku hits Tito with repeated backbreakers while Tama lays the bad mouth on him. Tito, you know, is doing a really good job selling. I wouldn't say it wasn't like the Martel level, but, you know, it was very good. It was, mm-hmm. you know, it was entertaining. To switch things up, rather than a crescent kick, it was Tama clotheslining Haku. And then it's wee wee Ricky Martel, baby. He takes out both Islanders. Tito Santana tags back in. Flying burrito. Figure four, Haku breaks it up. Shades of what we've seen before.
Yeah, that's true.
Only to have Wee Wee Ricky Martel sunset flip Haku for the win. Mm-hmm. And there you go. End of the feud. I thought it was the best of the last three matches. Yeah. Since the October
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely it's the first four matches of the feud. So September of MSG, the first two Philly, Boston, and then two out of three falls, I think make a complete foursome.
Yeah.
This was good. It was good. It was entertaining.
Yeah, it was okay. But yeah, better.
Man. You're rough.
It was better than the previous two, like you said. But yeah, I just the last three matches for me just are kind of there. They just didn't have the same feeling as the first three we looked at tonight.
B. Brian Blair does it for you.
Yeah, we needed some. The it's not the talent involved. It's just. Yeah, they just they'd been going around the horn.
It was a little played out.
They were played out.
I did you watched all of it like in one sitting.
Yeah,
I think that kind of hurts it too.
That too, But I'm sure, you know, they were sick of each other by this time. They'd been wrestling each other for months on end.
This is true.
And there was not...
You'd be sick of wrestling Ricky Montel.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, overall, a great feud. This match had some funny things, though. The Philly fans, smart-ass Philly fans, were chanting Tonga Kid throughout the match at Tama, of course, showing how smart they are. I have a question. Were we supposed to consider Haku and Tama completely different people than King Tonga and the Tonga Kid?
I would imagine so.
Right. Even though they look exactly the same and it was only like basically months in between.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I was just wondering, was there ever any like reference when they first started as the Islanders that they used to be known as King Tonga and the Tonga Kid? I don't know. I just, especially for King Tonga, it was like 1 week he was King Tonga, the next week he was Haku, essentially.
Wait, what I don't understand, and I don't know why it just occurred to me now, but like, why is Tama the Tonga Kid? Isn't he from Samoa? What? Am I confused with something?
I don't know. It's all...
Yeah, they're from American Samoa. Tonga is definitely a different place than American Samoa.
Right. Well, it gets all very confusing.
Well, I guess he was billed as a cousin of Snuka.
He was Snuka's cousin. Yeah. Fijian. Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, because Haku's actually from the Kingdom of Tonga. I'm pretty sure. And yeah. Tonga is a king, and it is.
Was he actually a king? Yeah. That's legit. It's funny how he became King Haku eventually.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't even think of that either.
Yeah. I wonder. What? Anyway, it's strange how it all works. I mean, I know it's wrestling, and you're supposed to be like, oh yeah, you know, you're not supposed to think that, you know, these are the same people or whatever. But okay. It was pretty blatant. I mean, even by wrestling standards, that, you know, they just changed their names, and there was no attempt to even mask that they were the same person.
Haku was in the New Japan Royal Rumble. On January
4th. Oh, yeah, right. That was one of the big surprises. Right?
Yeah.
Well, good for him. He's still...
I didn't know if you would get pumped about that.
I was kind of... put a smile on my face when I heard it. Yeah,
for sure. I'm glad you smiled.
That's as far as it goes for me with New Japan. I'll read the spoilers. I've yet to see a full New Japan... modern New Japan.
I'm trying to think of the best one I've seen so far. Oh, is Tanahashi versus Nakamura from 2014 and AJ Styles versus Minoru Suzuki from 2014. Nothing from 2015 I thought was must see, but okay. 2014 had a couple gems.
Yeah. Well, anyway, okay. That's that.
Yeah, you're talking about the match, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I think we've explained this one. Yeah, so now that we've looked at all these matches, maybe we'll do a quick roundup before we end things here. Marty, this was your baby, so to speak, this feud. You know, you pimped it years ago. You caught my attention by praising it, and
I mean, this is why Tag Teams Back Again exists.
Yeah, basically, this was.
Is it? You would have never known who I was.
Yep. Yeah. It's kind of the origin of this show.
I was just a good looking streetwalker.
Yeah. I took you under my wing, and
this is my pretty woman.
There we go. Yeah. So yeah, closing thoughts on the Strikeforce versus Islanders feud.
So I had not seen all these matches. I had only seen the September Madison Square Garden, the October Madison Square Garden, and the December Philly match. I mean, the thing that really impressed me was the entire build through Madison Square Garden. So that was the stuff that I focused on. I mean, obviously that was excellent. Seeing the Boston Philadelphia early stuff was great. But yeah, I think just watching that, it's kind of disappointing they kind of ended on a sad note because, you know, they won the tag team title. So that could have you know, breathed some new life into the feud.
Right.
Now it goes from being just, you know, the stakes of a blood feud to being the stakes of, you know, the greatest prize in that division. So it's kind of disappointing that it went the other way. You would have thought the tag team belts would have elevated it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for some reason, just I thought the matches were still very good. Are still good. I like them quite a bit, but just not the level of the earlier stuff. And the earlier stuff, I would say, is probably the best stuff the WWF tag team divisions ever produced.
Yeah,
I would say the Madison Square Garden stuff. Just that September match, just the way it builds from the singles matches is just really incredible.
Yeah.
I think there's some rocker stuff that we'll see eventually that gets up to that level, but the WWF Tag Team Division doesn't usually reach those heights.
No. Yeah, it had the story that
yeah, it really had, yeah. The Rockers matches misses a lot. Rockers matches tend to not have stories behind them. They're just great matches.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I agree. It was great to finally see this all play out right from the beginning. Yeah, the first half is great. I mean, the road to going from the Can-Am Connection to Strikeforce, that whole story is great. Great matches. You get Tito getting involved. It's exceptional stuff. I recommend those singles matches. I recommend, of course, the initial match at MSG between the two teams. That's an excellent tag team match. The first three matches we discussed on this show are also must watches. I think you should seek those out.
Definitely.
And like Marty said, once the blood feud sort of aspect is over. So basically, after the 2 out of 3 falls MSG match, and then the transition to with Strikeforce being the tag champions, it's a whole different program. Basically, it's just a tag team title program at that point. And, you know, there's still a bit of the hate there, but it seems like, you know, something has passed, and we're just sort of watching them sort of play out the string at this point. And but that doesn't discount what came before it, and it's really good stuff. I mean, Ricky Martel, hell, we've gone on and on about him. You know, you want to see a babyface work like a friggin' awesome babyface. This is Ricky Martel here is as good an example as you'll get anywhere. He's amazing. Tito is no slouch either, of course. Always a solid hand in every match he's been involved with. And, you know, the Islanders. They really come into their own as a great heel tag team. You know, Tama especially. We've praised Tama a lot. He was just, you know, born to be a heel, born to be bad. He's definitely an underappreciated talent from the 80s. One of the more underrated workers of the 80s. And Haku. I mean, he would go on to bigger and better things, or at least more, you know, well-known things for him coming up in the late 80s. But Tama, unfortunately, this is the high watermark for this guy, because the next year, 1988, basically he fades away and is never really a major player again. And it is sad. I mean, I don't even really know the details on as to what happened exactly.
Yeah, me either.
But yeah, I mean, and we talked about Tama the Tonga Kid on the Titans of Wrestling second part of the Piper tribute, and how important he was in the Piper Snuka feud of 1984, and getting in there and actually main eventing MSG against Piper when he was only 19 years old. He was a sensational young talent, and it's really a shame that he wasn't able to keep progressing, because he was still so young here. God, he was probably only 23. It's insane.
He's only 50 right now.
Yeah. So not
he
even
could be wrestling right now.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Nick Bockwinkel, a man we've talked about on the show today, was the AWA champion past the age of 50. I mean, his famous match with Kurt Hennig that goes 60 minutes, he was, what, 52 years old, I think, at that time.
Yeah.
So just look at that. That really...
Tama should be main eventing WrestleMania right
that,
now.
That puts things...
John Cena's injured. We need Tama to step up.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody has to.
I think Tom is that man.
Yeah, okay, well, Vince will have to dust off his old...
Oh, my God, Tama versus Roman Reigns, Samoan on Samoan.
Oh, well, there you go.
There you go, brother, right well, there. That's booked WrestleMania gold.
That's the, what? How are they related again?
Exactly. Who knows? Tama is actually Rikishi's twin brother, I believe.
He's Rikishi's twin brother, and the Usos are Rikishi's sons, correct?
Yes. So what they should do is they should have, I don't know, I haven't figured this out yet. Oh, I got it. They should have The Rock, Tama, and Rikishi against Roman Reigns and the Usos six-man tag main event.
Yeah.
Silence, because it's that awesome, guys.
Oh well, but yes, I mean, Vince could probably use some cooking ideas right at that moment, and you never know.
Exactly. I think he should hire me and Tama together.
Haku's fresh, you know. He's
yeah. Back. He just opened the Dome show.
There you go.
So I mean, opener of the Dome show to main event of WrestleMania.
An Islanders comeback in 2016 is what we need.
Yeah, I think this is what we need more than anything else. How old's Rick Martel? I think Rick Martel can make a comeback.
Okay, and then Tito's still kicking around occasionally. Oh, let's have a just bring the feud back.
Rick Martel's only 59. Ric Flair was wrestling at 59.
There you go. So we'll just bring the feud back in 2016.
I just saved WrestleMania.
You just saved WrestleMania. I hate they main evented the Spectrum before 4,500 people in 1987.
And now they can main event in front of, what, 120,000, 105,000? What is it going to be?
Yeah, about
105,000. 105,000. Rick Martel, Tito Santana versus Tama and Haku.
There we go.
Don't need to put the tag titles on the line.
No. Blood feud. Total blood feud
all the way.
Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, I had a blast doing these two shows. We saw a lot of great wrestling. And yeah, now, before we go, a little preview of the next couple episodes, maybe. Just a little, throw out a little, some names, some teams.
I don't even know what's on the next couple of episodes. Ooh. Can't wait to be as surprised as our listeners.
What to expect? Well, I think the next episode will do kind of like a wrap-up of 1987, or at least, you know, look at some things we've skipped or missed. One,
like Strike Force versus Hart Foundation.
Oh, yes. There we go. There's one right there. The tag team title switch from October.
Which is a great match.
Yes, a very good match. So I think we'll look at that. We've been talking about the Jumping Bomb Angels from the Orient.
I don't think you can say Orient in 2016.
I can. I'm old enough to still use that word.
Oh, you're also on the Pacific Coast.
Yeah, I'm close to the Orient. Yes. Anyway, they were a sensation when they debuted in 1987. You know, they were doing moves that nobody else was doing at the time. Of course, they were a female team. And so we're going to look at them, kind of a team that, or a phase of WWF tag team wrestling that's been forgotten was their run. And there's actually women's tag team belts. So it's
the height of women's wrestling, the 1980s.
Yeah, the height of women's tag team wrestling, that's for sure. So we're going to be looking at a few of their matches against the Glamour Girls, because that's the only team they ever wrestled, pretty much. Then we have a team I want to look at known as the Shadows. We've discussed the Shadows a few times.
Okay.
So, we will check them out. I found a couple of longish Shadows matches on YouTube, Daily Motion, just recently. So, yeah. And then, well, I think I'll leave it into your hands then, Marty. It's only fair that you pick a few matches to round things out. There is also Demolition versus Billy Jack Haynes and Ken Patera kind of floating.
Man, I feel like you just got it all, Kelly.
Floating out there.
I feel like you've done a lot of research on this.
Well, you know, I've done a little bit, but
I'm trying to think of who we're who is the New Dream Team was wrestling with, the Rougeaus in the late 87?
Yeah, I think so.
Who else? Oh, wait. We can just look at the Survivor Series list. Yeah. We're going to do the entire Survivor Series card.
That is the other preview. That'll be the.
I knew that one because I think I suggested.
That was your idea. Yeah,
that was my idea. So I remember that. I'm not that absent-minded.
So tag teams back again. 14. The next episode will be the Jumping Bomb Angels, Shadows, miscellaneous stuff, and then tag teams 15 will be our look at Survivor Series, top to bottom. Survivor Series 1987.
Oh, I think there's some Bulldogs Bolsheviks matches to watch.
Okay. Yes, the Bolsheviks have arrived on the scene.
Oh, Boris Zhukov is so bad.
He's got a great head, though.
Have you said that before?
Oh, maybe.
I think somebody else has said that. I guess I've never really, I don't know. I guess you've got a point.
It looks like it could withstand like a full blast baseball bat shot, and he'd be totally fine with it. As for wrestling ability, no, he didn't have much, but he had a magnificent head.
I always felt like Nikolai Volkov should have been better than he was.
Well, some would say in the 70s he was pretty good, but...
Yeah. I never saw Beepo.
I don't think there's much footage of existing of him as Beepo or Beppo.
I think it's Beepo.
Was it Beepo? Okay.
No, I'm giving you shit.
You say Beepo. I have no idea.
Beppo actually sounds a lot better than
Beepo. You say Beepo, I say Beppo. I think it's Beppo.
But we're all Mongols.
Anyways, so yeah, Bolsheviks are now on the scene. Interesting. Yeah, so Marty will throw some matches into the pot for number 14, and then we will do Survivor Series for number 15. All right. Any closing comments, Marty?
Just too sweet.
Too sweet.
I love that NWO vignette where they just keep saying sweet to each other.
There's sweet. All right. Good night, folks.